Well, Matt, if I was to have taken my own advice months ago when I was telling other people to invest in Bitcoin, today, at about 11 o'clock, my house and cars would have been paid off.
Just imagine if you still would have had those four that you had from that we talked about last week.
Oh, no. It was one of those things. I was actually on a phone call with a vendor, and I watched the price go from $16,000 to $20,000, and I was just nauseous. I'm like, gosh, why can't I just take my own advice? I give it to people, but then I don't do it. And I think the reason was I was just scared. I was scared of losing the money and scared of my wife.
Yeah, because I think you were telling me that you were telling people to invest in it when I think it was about $2,000.
Yeah, about $2,000. It was a bargain at $2,000. And now it did do a little flash crash after that, but it hit $20,500 today.
That is insane.
Insanity.
I mean, and it was quick, too, because I remember when you told me it was like $16,950 or something like that, and you're just like, it's going to reach $17,000. And then it ended up going up to $20,000.
Yes.
And it just kind of reminds me of the question I asked you earlier. It's like, when is it just going to drop? When is it just going to bottom out? When is this fad of cryptocurrency just going to go away?
Well, I think it's still going to stick around. I don't think it's going to be in these current forms. Well, maybe one of them. But Bitcoin is essentially a dead protocol. I mean, the network is so congested. Transactions generally take about 12 hours to process. It was more of a Satoshi Nakamura, the guy that created it. He solved a 30-year-old math problem with it, creating a working blockchain. And it's really the first working blockchain. It was merely a proof of concept that, hey, these things can actually work. So I think we're going to be doing it. I mean, there are state-sponsored blockchain currencies now. But what's interesting about these flash crashes, you know, it shot up really fast, and then it crashed. But it crashed to an amount that was higher than yesterday. So there's a market tolerance for it.
Is that really a crash when it's still higher than what it was yesterday?
And that's true. I mean, is it? I guess depending on the time frame that you're looking at, it is a crash. But it's still up and consistently up. That's the thing.
Now, let's see. The thing I have a couple of dollars in your Ethereum, I think, is that's how you say the word.
Ethereum.
Ethereum. I think I mentioned that last week. But the idea of this digital currency is, I kind of like the idea because I'm the guy, I don't want to carry a wallet anymore. I don't really like carrying cash now. If it was up to me, I like Apple Pay. I wish I had my license digitalized on my phone. But the thing is, you'd have to hand over your phone to the police officer if you ever get pulled over, and I'm not real keen on that idea either. But why are we still relying on these archaic methods of identification and stuff or even finances with printed paper money and coins when all this new stuff is coming out? It seems like nowadays every 15-year-old kid is coming up with some blockchain to make another cryptocurrency. I think Dogecoin, I think, was one for a while where it looked like a little dog picture or something.
Yeah, there's hundreds of them, but there's only a few of them that are actually doing anything new. Ethereum is the one that I find the most interesting just because they have a feature in there called smart contracts, and Ethereum is actually, the currency of Ethereum is just a byproduct of Ethereum. It's actually a world computer is how they define it. It's actually a full Turing programming language. So you can write any kind of application in Ethereum, and it actually runs on top of the blockchain.
Oh, well, that's good.
Which is really interesting. But, you know, I'm looking at the chart right now. We're talking about Bitcoin crashing today, but it's still 22% up from yesterday.
It's amazing. And last week we were talking that it reached 10,000 last week. That was the big thing that we were talking about.
Yes. And so 16,000 is normal now.
And so 7 days later it reaches 20,000 and then kind of drops down to 16. And they're projecting 27 by the end of the year. I think it'll be more than 27.
Yeah, if it does some of the behavior that it's done today, it's definitely going to hit something higher.
So what causes it to skyrocket like that just out of the clear blue?
Well, being Bitcoin doesn't actually have any features, it's all speculation on Bitcoin. Ethereum moves when they announce new feature sets to it. Monero moves when, like John McAfee talks about it being the underground currency. I mean, and that was one that got overlooked. I mean, last week it was $80. It hit $300 yesterday.
That's another growing one.
And I actually really like that one. It has some really nice anonymity features in it. It's kind of a compared to a digital cash, where Bitcoin gets coined as digital gold. So, I mean, yeah, I mean, yes, I can't think of many good things that happen with the Monero currency, but I like its idea.
I think there's somewhere in there, there's a joke, because didn't McAfee, like, get charged for murder or something? I wonder if he, like, hired a hitman with his own digital currency or something.
Well, it's not his currency. But no, he did get charged with murder, and I really don't know what happened to that, but he's all over the news all the time, so it couldn't have been much.
Yeah, probably not, but...
Yeah, I was just sick today, knowing that if I would have taken my own advice, I wouldn't have any bills right now.
You know, it's not just... How many times did we do that, like... Even when it comes to, like, our job, if we would just kind of sit back and retroactively think, it's like, you know what, if I would have just made that decision like I really wanted it to, maybe I wouldn't be in the same situation that I'm in right now.
Yeah. I mean, maybe I should have switched authentication mechanisms earlier.
Yes, maybe we should have been using 802.1x authentication for our Chromebooks instead of a pre-shared key.
Yeah.
Because that was a complete nightmare.
Oh my gosh, Google. I don't think they can ever let this happen again, so at least this storm's over.
You know, I kind of agree with your tweet. It's like, yes, I'm not doing probably what I should be doing as far as, like, industry standard and doing the 802.1x like I should and using, like, the old-style method of pre-shared keys, but how do you mess this up? How do you knock thousands and thousands of Chromebooks off of their networks and tell people that the answer is they have to go manually reconnect?
You know, I wish they would release the details about actually what happened, and I'm sure it'll eventually make it into the Chromium project as a patch where we'll get to see. But pre-shared keys have some funny stuff. There's actually two different keys that work at any given time. There's a 64-character hexadecimal digit that works, and then your plain text that you've entered. So I'm wondering if there was, like, a reconciliation issue that caused an invalid configuration, because... I mean, we really don't know how Google's storing them. I mean, you can go look at the policy and see, but we don't know how that's actually stored.
Whatever the problem was, I just hope it doesn't happen again, because, I mean, in the grand scheme of things, I only had 200 or so Chromebooks that I had to go manually touch, and I really didn't even touch them all because I kind of did something in the start when I originally got the Chromebooks where I kind of stood up and opened SSID that I connected them to so I can enroll them originally. And so and the Chromebooks actually remembered that network, and so I was actually able to just turn that network back on, which it's still running today. I'm going to shut it off this afternoon and kind of at that point go manually clean up anything that's left over, whatever. Because once Google pushed out the fix, once it got onto a network, it automatically pulled its right policies, and so it connected to the right Wi-Fi again. Now, I ran the risk of there's some kids over here at the junior high and elementary that are connecting their phones to that Wi-Fi, but because it's, like, SSL decrypted and really heavily filtered, they're probably not really doing much anyway.
Yeah, it'd be a pain in the butt for them to use their phones.
Because they're probably getting a bunch of certificate errors, so I'm not too worried about it, and they'll get kicked off whenever I turn it off tonight. But... I was reading kind of some of the tweets that replied to Google for Education's Twitter account that, I mean, I had 200-something devices that were affected. And what's really funny is not all of them were affected. It was kind of crazy. There were some that stayed connected just fine. But what about the schools that have thousands of devices?
Yeah, I mean, there was a school that I was reading in there that had 10,000 Chrome devices that were affected by this. And, again, I don't think this bug's ever going to happen. But, granted, they may have been using not the best way to authenticate their Chromebooks, but dang it, don't screw that up, because that's a lot of work. Now, yes, the kids can connect a device to Wi-Fi. They know how to do this. And if it was a one-to-one device where they bring them home, the problem would have been resolved when they went home anyway. But still, can you imagine if that would have happened during the middle of online testing?
And what's funny is that was a testing day. And
yeah. It was just towards the afternoon where most had finished up.
Yeah, it was like I was in the middle of my lunch, and I got an email saying that all the Chromebooks got disconnected from the internet. And I'm like, what just happened. And the first thing that's going through my mind is, because, I mean, you know that I've been playing with 802.1x authentication, and so I was kind of messing with the network settings or whatever in the Google admin console, and I accidentally clicked remove on the original network, but I didn't ever hit save down at the bottom of the settings page. I hit cancel or revert or whatever to get back out of it, because that's when I found out that the connection setting is not like all the other settings where you could change it from inherited to locally applied just by making a change to that organization unit. So I didn't ever save that change. And so I go fix a couple of carts of Chromebooks by manually connecting it and typing in the password, doing all that. But then I was like, okay, I've got to go figure out why this happened. So I go get on the phone with Google, and I was on the phone for an hour on hold.
Yeah, I remember, because I kept going, hey, do you have anyone yet? Do you have anyone yet?
In fact, it actually took 6 or 7 times for the phone call to actually go through. And so that, to me, was the beginning of, okay, I didn't do this because apparently a lot of other people are having problems because their phone lines are full.
And one of the things that was interesting, just down the road from us, Silsby ISD was actually affected by it, too, because they use a pre-shared authentication for all their Chromebooks also.
And I know that Brid City was affected, too. So there was a lot of us that were affected.
Yeah. I got lucky and dodged a bullet there.
Yeah, because you're actually doing things the right way.
I wouldn't go that far, but because I'm doing things a different way.
Yeah, and I'm looking into it. In fact, and what's really funny is I was starting this process. I was starting the whole process of switching over to the 802.1x. I was trying to work out some filter issues as far as tracking the users before I pushed it out district-wide.
Yeah, I think we might have got through those resolved, though. I mean,
yeah, I think we can get that figured out, and then I'm just gonna start, hopefully, when we get back from the Christmas break, that I can start implementing that. But, I mean, it was just nuts.
Yeah, that was a bad bug. And you know what, though? It exposes one of the problems that we do have in education using Google as a free product. We have no service-level agreement with Google. We're receiving the product for free. We receive support for free. Therefore, we have no service-level agreement. And you remember, I went and figured up the price that it would be for 1,700 users in your district, which I think is actually under that what you have, how much of that would cost. It was $510,000 a year.
No, ain't nobody going to pay that.
I know. I mean, but that's what it would actually cost for us to get under a service-level agreement with Google.
And what would have mattered if we had a service-level agreement or not? Well, we got a refund check for about 3 hours' worth of downtime. I mean, that's all they would have done.
Well, first off, it wouldn't have happened to us because those customers have more testing on them. We are actually the test grounds for a lot of Google's customers.
And, you know, and I get that they can get away with that legally because we don't have a leg to stand on when it comes to, like, screaming and hollering that they did this to us because we don't pay and we don't have that service level agreement. But, I mean, Google...
It leaves a bad taste.
It does that, and, I mean, Google has built their Chromebook market on the back of education.
And they And they actually kept it alive because we in education asked them to.
Yeah, because they were going to kill it and merge it with Android or something.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like, and so to me, it's like when your customer base is that big, free or not, I mean, don't do things like that.
And you know, being it wasn't every Chromebook, it had to be just one particular server that got messed up.
Somebody fat-fingered something.
I guarantee it. You know, maybe they misconfigured Puppet or Chef when they were doing a mass configuration and one server got left out.
But, you know, you bring up the fact that it brings out, like, one flaw that we have, not having the service level agreement, but it also brings out a flaw, and we've talked about this before, about having cloud-managed devices and cloud-managed solutions, that one wrong thing goes wrong on some Amazon server or some Google server and your whole infrastructure is down. I mean, what if we were using cloud-managed switches and something happened and it erased the config on your switch? What do you do?
I mean, Meraki, sorry, but this is a perfect example. I know that you have a license agreement and your network will continue functioning. You just won't allow changes. But what happens if you push out a bad policy and erase configs? Can you imagine if your network would have been erased?
I would have just quit. I went home.
I mean, can you imagine going through and having to reload everything for testing the next morning?
I know, and that's what's really bad is a lot of people use those Chromebooks for testing because the app for testing is a lot better on the Chromebook than it is on Windows. And I don't even want to talk about that because I had to fix that first thing Monday morning. So I was off to a great start this week having to deal with my testing app that's supposed to update itself that didn't update.
No, and honestly, I don't think we can trust ETS or Pearson to do anything correctly.
No, and so it's like I might as well just start waiting till the day before testing to actually push out the software to make sure I actually have the up-to-date version. But that's a conversation for another thing.
I don't allow testing on any device but a Chromebook now.
Well,
I just don't.
Because of the hurricane, when it comes to star testing for the elementary, I mean, that's what they're going to be using is the Chromebook. And I'm actually fine with it, 100% okay with it.
Mm-hmm. Now, I always, when we do testing days, I have boxes and boxes of mice and headphones that I bring out because some people don't like using a trackpad, and we want to give them all the advantage they can have on these tests because there's so much based upon it. So I have lots of keyboards and mice and stuff like that that I give out. And I'm okay with that because I'm not having to manage a Windows installation where if, God forbid, Microsoft puts out an update or a balloon window pops up in the taskbar and it cancels the whole test because something else opened.
Yeah, and don't get us wrong. I mean, we're kind of griping about Google here and their bad policy, but Microsoft's burned us before in the past, too, with Windows updates and server updates and sorts of things.
I remember one a few years ago back when, and this is going to date me, when Service Pack 3 came out for Windows 2000.
That is a long time ago, dude.
I know. But it was a really bad bug. Back then, Veritas was a very, very popular backup solution. And if you were using Veritas on a Windows 2000 server running Service Pack 2, and you upgraded to Service Pack 3, your server didn't boot anymore.
That's bad. That's really bad.
And that was back before virtual servers. So we didn't have snapshots or anything we could roll back to. No, it was stand up and rebuild or find a way to roll back without actually booting. It was awful.
And what is Veritas's answer? The shrug emoji. Oh, well.
It was don't upgrade to Service Pack 3. We haven't tested. Valid point, but...
But when Microsoft pushes out its own updates because we don't have time to manage Windows Update servers like we should.
They were like, hey, yeah, go ahead. Approve every service pack.
I mean, and that kind of goes back to the conversation we had yesterday or last week. When we probably actually had it yesterday, too. But because we wear so many hats that we can't dedicate the time to each individual thing like we should. I mean, managing Windows updates, I mean, that could be somebody's full-time job. Like testing patches and make sure that it's good to go and approving this and disallowing that. The last bad one that I got was actually, I think, last year or the year before, where Microsoft pushed out a bad update for Word, and you couldn't type in Word anymore.
Well, you know, that was probably a blessing at the same time.
as a way to force to switch to Google Drive or Google Docs.
Yeah, or anything else. Good Lord.
But I mean,
see that you're typing a letter. Would you like some assistance? No, I wouldn't.
But, I mean, it's like in the middle of a class the class is Microsoft Word. I mean, it's a Microsoft Office Certification Specialist class or whatever that we're teaching to get a certification, and Word doesn't work because of a bad update. And so I had to go find, like, the update that it was and actually kind of looked it up and said, yes, it's a known bug. You need to uninstall it. Wrote a little script. Pushed it out as a login script, rebooted those machines, or a startup script, rebooted those machines, it uninstalled that update, everything was fine. But still, I mean, so it's not just Google.
No. Everybody makes these problems right now. And the problem, I mean, it's a good analogy that they are using is the cloud because we can't control the weather. I mean...
Exactly. Because, I mean, it's like there's snow in our forecast. I just got through telling my kid like a week ago that he would probably never see snow. And now he's probably going to get to see snow. I mean...
Way to teach your son you're a liar.
It's like the world's falling apart. I mean, we flood and then we're getting snow. It's crazy.
You know what? On that, this is completely off topic, like we're on topic of anything anyway. But every time we've had a hurricane, we've had snow in that winter. Like back when Hurricane Rita hit, we had snow in that December. And then Ike, we had snow. So I guess here's Harvey Snow.
Harvey Snow. So, I mean, it's kind of cool. It's just kind of bad that it's happening like... Early in the morning, and so I don't know if I'll be able to get my kid outside to see it in enough time before I get to work.
Fingers crossed that they panic and cancel school.
Hey, that's a great idea.
You know they've done it in the past.
But I don't think we can miss any more days, and so I don't think they'll do it here.
Forget about it.
But it's just bad. Everything's just, I mean, if somebody is going to have bugs, I mean, this is the 2 week period to have it. First you have the Apple bugs that's going crazy. And then right after we recorded our episode, I was editing and I'm starting to see on Twitter late at night that there's another bug for Apple had in iOS 11.1.2 or whatever, where if it, December 2nd or
yeah,
whatever day
that
was. Yeah,
it was a certain time. The phone locked up, wasn't it?
It was doing a springboard crash reboot, and so it was just crazy. And so they had to – when was the last time they pushed a point update to an operating system early Saturday morning?
No lie. That wasn't Adobe's fault anyway.
Yeah, and this one actually had like a big feature in it. It came with Apple Pay Cash, and so they actually rolled out the update but didn't turn on the Apple Pay Cash until like Monday or Tuesday.
That's
so, but it's crazy that they can do that. But it's like it's been a bad week for software developers. I mean, between Apple and their root password.
Now, we haven't had one in the news though. Microsoft hadn't had their blunder this past week yet. So yeah. Next week's their turn.
Well, they kind of had a blunder in announcing that Windows 10 was coming to ARM and kind of like released it a little bit, because, you know, if at first you don't succeed, try again. And so,
and it's not so much Windows 10's coming to ARM, it's Windows 10's coming to Qualcomm. There's like one ARM manufacturer that's on board with it.
Well, probably because they're learning from their Windows RT mistakes. And only RT apps and Windows Store apps can run, and so they've probably worked with Qualcomm to kind of optimize that processor in Windows 10 so that they can do the x86 emulation.
Well, you know what's going to happen. The second this hits the market, Intel's going to sue them. They've already said they're going to, because Microsoft doesn't have an x86 license.
Well, I guess we'll see what happens.
I know. I'm very fascinated to see what happens with this, because I mean, Windows 10 ARM, they developed it for the higher-end Snapdragons. I think the first version is going to be for the 835 and the 845 that's soon to be released. They have a code folding technique, kind of like Transmeta did with their Crusoe and Officion processors, to translate x86 into the native processor's language. And they've had to work real closely with Qualcomm to do this. And in the process, they've kind of bypassed Intel's licensing with Qualcomm to do x86. I'm fascinated with how it's going to play out, because Qualcomm actually has some partnerships with Intel and AMD now for Windows 10 devices with Qualcomm modems built in.
Well, I think Qualcomm's at odds with everybody right now, what it seems like. I know them and Apple are fighting over some patents and some licensing deals, and somebody's not wanting to pay somebody, and somebody's upset about it. So, I mean, that's the technology industry. But the whole reason why I wanted to kind of bring up Windows 10 on ARM was because I'm thinking, hey, maybe a cheap Windows 10 laptop running ARM-based, that's my answer to my Google Cloud management.
It could be, but then you're also going to have to switch to Microsoft's cloud-based MDM.
Oh, yeah, because it probably won't work with, like, Active Directory like a normal Windows computer. So
I can see. Must be using Azure AD.
But it's like I texted my boss as soon as all this happened, and I found out what happened. I was like, you know, this is why I chose on-premise Jamf, so I have a little bit control of, like, how of my management of my iPad, so that I know that I'm not installing something or doing something on my Jamf server that's going to, like, mess up the management of my iPads. Now, granted, I'm still at the mercy of some Apple Cloud services like push notifications and the tokens to connect to DEP and the volume purchasing store, but it's not like that's controlling my Wi-Fi connections. I can always wait for that to come back on.
Yeah. I mean, you can just not make any changes for a little bit, and that's going to be okay.
Yeah, but I mean, it's just to knock... I'm sorry, I'm going back to it, and I don't know why. I guess because it still bothers me. But knocking all those Chromebooks off their networks and making them forget their keys, that's a bad move.
You know, I wonder what percentage of customers were actually affected.
That's probably a number they're never going to release.
I don't think they would, but I guarantee it's probably going to be smaller than we're thinking.
Yeah, I'm hoping they caught it fast enough. And I'm wondering if that may be why some of my Chromebooks were affected and some weren't. Maybe because the ones that were really affected, it's almost like the students just pulled those out and connected them. But the ones that weren't really affected, they had been using for a little while. And so maybe they had already gotten their policy and they didn't get this updated policy. And so there was like that time delay between the policy updates. And so that may be why those weren't affected. But, I mean, it was just crazy.
Yeah, I mean, and honestly, there's really no excuse for them. I mean, they should know better than this.
They should. But
and thank goodness they did catch it as quickly as they did and resolve it. Now, granted, the resolution sucked because, well, it's offline, so we can't really patch it automatically. So, yeah, deal with it.
Yeah, it was like one of the replies to their Twitter tweet was, I have 3,400 Chromebooks in the hand of kindergartners, and now I have to go type in a password. Yeah, just let your students connect to it. Yeah, mine are in the hands of kindergartners.
Or create that open network, let it connect to an open network so they don't have to type a password. Heck, you could make the SSID an emoji, and then they'd want to click it.
Connect to the smiley face.
Yeah, touch the kitty cat, kids.
And that's essentially what I did. I fired up I made that open Wi-Fi that I use broadcast more than just the cafeteria where I set all these stuff up. And so it went everywhere. And so that's why I'm having people over at the junior high and elementary connect to it, because it's never been broadcasted over there. And they're thinking, hey, open Wi-Fi. Because apparently some people leave that thing on their phone that says, ask to join networks, which is the most annoying feature ever. But some people leave that on and they're just like, yeah, sure, join. But so that's essentially what I did was I turned on that open Wi-Fi, sent them an email saying, hey, this is kind of what happened. It's been resolved, but part of the resolution is you have to manually connect. So if you're still having problems connecting Chromebooks, have your students connect to this SSID in the dropdown. It'll get its right policy and hop over to the right network. And I didn't have any email responses back from teachers that was a problem or they didn't know how to do it. And so I'm assuming everything went okay, and we'll see if the world ends tomorrow whenever I turn it off. Because I'm going to turn that open Wi-Fi off. Hopefully everything stays connected. Get rid of those people that shouldn't have been connected to that Wi-Fi. I mean, I was even into the point where I was in DHCP, and I was like, right click and deny. It's like, you're not supposed to be on here. But then I was thinking, you know, I'm not going to do that. This close to Christmas, I'm not going to be that much of a Grinch. And plus, I didn't know any better, and this isn't normally advertised. So I'll let it go.
That's pretty funny. Now, I did have a funny Wi-Fi issue this week. It's not anything that I should complain about, but it was a funny issue. At our junior high library, there was a new television purchased for that I was not aware of.
Don't you just love those?
I do. It happens more often than it should. But
I mean, with anything. I mean, printers, TVs, anything that's going to get hooked up to the network, you would think the network people or the technology people would have some kind of say in it to make sure, well, you're buying a wireless printer, but it's not compatible with our wireless, so don't buy the wireless one, buy the wired one.
Yeah, but they don't at least buy some equipment you know is going to work. Well, what was funny about this one, this is one of those Vizio TVs that doesn't have a real remote. It has, like, power and source on the remote, which is
those SmartCast ones?
God, what's bloody awful. Well, anyway, apparently Aruba Air Group, if you just kind of leave it kind of halfway configured because you know we're all lazy and hey, it's working now, so we leave it alone. Yeah, everybody in my school was getting a notification that ran Android that hey, something's cast into this device, and it let them all pause it. It was hilarious.
Okay, that's funny, but my question is, why is that a feature?
Well, the reason it's a feature is because Aruba has it's called Air Group. And once you have Air, and I do have it configured properly now, once you have Air Group configured properly, there's a section that shows devices that are trying to cast, and you can select that device and grant, even down to the individual user level, people that are allowed to use it, all from the wireless controller.
And I get that, and that's a good feature, but what I was kind of asking was, why does Google think that it's a good idea to broadcast to everybody that somebody is casting on their phones?
Because these TVs are not meant to be in enterprise environments, and it would be very handy at your house because then you could just say, hey, connect here.
Yeah. Hey, we're watching a YouTube video. Come see.
Yes, exactly.
But then to give them permissions to pause it. That's what's crazy.
Yeah, I know. They could pause it, and they could have canceled the stream.
Or casted whatever they wanted up there.
Oh, I know.
And if it's anything like AirPlay, I mean, you set up your AirPlay connection, and you open your photos. Whatever your photo is open into, that's what's going on the screen by default.
Yep, and that's how this thing was. So I think what I'm going to end up doing with this Vizio Smart TV is I'm going to rip its brain out, disconnect it from the network, and stick a Roku on it.
Let me tell you a secret, though. I actually have three of those TVs hanging in my cafeteria right now, the SmartCast ones.
How do you like it?
I like the TV itself. It's fine. Mine actually came with a remote, and so I was kind of lucky. Now, the remotes doesn't have a whole lot of buttons on it, so you can't do a whole lot, but there's actually been some software updates to the TV that makes the existing buttons actually do more to them.
But I only got, four on the remote.
And so then we might have a different TV. Because I remember reading about those TVs that you're talking about that, people threw a big stink about it because they were actually shipping with no remote at all. And so they were like, well, use your phone or use your tablet. You remember when they were actually shipping with a tablet for the remote?
Yeah, that little small Vizio tablet that was garbage.
Yeah. But and so they have actually kind of backpedaled a little bit, and they're actually shipping a remote now with these TVs. I mean, I like the TV. The picture's good. I mean, the Chromecast, I don't really care about it. I mean, nobody's really tried to cast to it, I guess, that I'm aware of. I don't really advertise it. I kind of have it on a network. Well, for one, I kind of isolate my students on their own network, and they don't really have access to anything. I use some ACLs in my wireless controller, and so, if that Chromecast was actually advertising itself to be able to be casted to, I guess that's the terminology, it doesn't show up on their phones to be able to do it.
And you know what's really funny is they are isolated on my network, but they still got the notification. Now, the students couldn't pause it or any of that, but they still got the notification because of the way Air Group was working.
I actually think my Cisco one can actually even manage some of that stuff on a SSID network interface level.
It's
I can
all
have
in the,
multiple...
It's all in the MDNS settings.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. I can actually have multiple profiles, and so I can create a special profile for students and then take away AirPlay. So, but what really gets me is why doesn't Chromecast have the feature like AirPlay that lets you put a password on it?
It does.
But I guess when the password shows up on the screen for them to put in.
The problem is there's Chromecast and then there's Miracast. Chromecast is using Miracast as protocol in the back end, but Miracast doesn't have to necessarily use Googlecast as feature set.
Okay, I got you.
So they're two different things that use the same underlying technology. One has more features than the other one, though. And these TVs use Miracast because do they really want to pay Google?
No, of course not.
No, and Miracast is the open standard.
Yeah, that's the one that Windows 10 actually uses for a lot of its stuff.
Yeah, and it works really well. And, in fact, Microsoft's Miracast applications do support passwords, but by golly, this television does not.
it's just crazy. But, you know, like you said, those TVs are built for the home.
Yeah, don't bring it up here.
And in
I would
fact,
have told you not to bring it up here if you would have asked.
And what's really funny is those smart TVs are actually cheaper than going to buy a TV that's dumb.
I know. But I got to rip its brain out now.
A lot of the dumb TVs, I've actually got two boxes sitting right next to me for these Samsung. They're called Samsung Hospitality TVs, which they're commercial
grade. They're Soviet Russia design?
Yes, but they are the cheapest made televisions I have ever seen in my life. They are complete, utter garbage. I mean, they are
awful. About 4 pounds?
I mean, they're a little bit heavier than that, but I mean, the screen, I mean, you could look at it and you could just barely poke it and the thing is broken. I mean, it is complete. In fact, we took one out of the box, it was broken.
Now, I have some here at the high school that we bought that they're sharp and they're actually industrial screens. So they cost a little bit more, but they're supposed to be immune to burn in and those kind of features because they're meant to be on all the time. And I absolutely love them. Now, the only thing they have is HDMI on them. They don't even have an ATSC tuner in them, but I absolutely love them. They've been phenomenal.
I mean, that's all I need. I'm piping some DirecTV receivers over HDMI and Cat5 to them, and that's really all I'm showing.
I couldn't get our DirecTV for schools boxes moved. They canceled the program before our high school was finished building. So I'm actually using Sling TV.
Oh, well, that's good. I kind of like that. I really want to move to a service like that. It's just I'm waiting on the one that I want to move to actually get cloud DVR service, and then I can move.
Well, I just use it here at the school. I don't use it at the house. But and what I'm using to push that feed into the televisions is a Roku again. I really do like the Roku boxes. And heck, those of you, your mileage may vary with this, but Walmart has some Roku Expresses for $9.
Yeah, I actually saw that. That's a great deal.
I saw them on the shelf, four of them, and I was like, man, Carla would be mad. But that's a steal. They're usually $39.
Yeah, it really is. And it will actually probably still play YouTube, unlike the Fire Stick.
You know, that really shows who Google is threatened by. It's not Apple. It's Amazon.
We'll talk about this for a minute, and then I want to switch to one thing, and we'll finish up. But I kind of want to talk about this because I want to know who is doing the other person wrong. Who needs who more? I personally think Amazon needs YouTube on their platform more than Google needs to be on the Amazon platform.
I can agree with you, but they have some competing services now. And Amazon is actually more popular on one of their competing services, Twitch versus YouTube Gaming. Twitch is way more popular than YouTube Gaming. And I think this is kind of Google going, well, screw you then.
Yeah, and Amazon's actually beating everybody, I think, in the lady in the can thing.
Which just kills me. I mean, heck, my thermostat at home was updated to support Alexa.
And I don't really want something that's listening to everything that's going on in my house, to be honest with you. And so that's why I haven't really jumped on the bandwagon of those things. Well, she listens for two words.
You say so.
So we're told, nothing leaves the device. And so, like, if it's recording anything, technically it's not, supposedly it's not leaving the device. It does all of its learning on the device itself, and that's why iCloud Photo Library is not as good as Google Photos. It's not as good as all these other services that are hosted in the cloud because everything's actually done on the device because Apple cares more about privacy than everybody else, supposedly. Quote unquote.
You know, supposedly. I'm going to be that guy for a second just to poke at you Apple people. Maybe that's just Apple's excuse because they can't program anything.
You know, I'm perfectly okay accepting that answer because they left the root password open.
Oh, and then reintroduced it.
I know. It's like, after they fixed it, they broke it again, and then they break file sharing. I mean, they break two fundamental pieces of technology that have been in Unix probably since the beginning. And how do you break that on your 13th version of your 10th edition?
It was a bad week.
It was a bad week for everything. But there is some good things that came out of this week. As you know, I'm going through this whole E-rate process about buying some equipment or whatever for these portable buildings that we're getting, and the whole E-rate thing where based on your demographics for your area, the government pays a percentage, and because of the hurricane, the government's paying a lot more of the percentage than what they normally pay for us, and so we need these buildings wired, and we need some network gear bought for them, and so we did this whole E-rate process to get that equipment at a lower price. This is the first, and this is what's really cool about this year. It's like I'm having to do a lot of walkthroughs with people. A lot of vendors have come in, did some webinars with some other vendors. But what's really cool about this process, it seems like this year, and this is the good thing, even though walkthroughs kind of get in the way sometimes, they come at like inconvenient times, like when you're trying to fix something and all of a sudden you got this walkthrough that you got to go do. But what's really cool, this year we've actually seemed to have more vendors like want to bid our form, our 470. That's what it's called when you put out like what you need. And so I've actually gotten to meet some new vendors that I think I'm actually may start doing business with in the future, just because this is the first time that I've ever had to deal with these people, and it's good to have multiple vendors to keep your options open to get your to get some better pricing. And so that's one of the, I mean, it's been a horrible week in the fact that we dealt with the Google bug. I mean, in Apple's issues, it really didn't affect anybody, I don't think, here, other than I didn't hear of anybody actually getting the boot loop on their phone. But I mean, it was nice to have a good thing about meeting some new vendors and hopefully building some business relationships in this whole process of like this crappy week that we've had.
Oh yeah, that's awesome. It's always great to get to know those people that you're going to have to be dealing with later, and especially if you find one that you like.
But that's sort of the process. You put out like your this is what we need, and people contact you and said, hey, we can do those needs. Let's come out and talk about it, and then you get a bid, and then you have to go through this whole thing, and then you pick your person, and then you have to send your Dear John letters to all the other ones. And so it's sort of an interesting process. In anything that involves the government, you have to kind of make sure that you're walking on toes and eggshells or whatever make sure that you do everything right.
It's a very long roll of red tape.
Yeah, but in the end, it can be a headache, and it can seem like it's a lot of work, but in the end, it's a lot worth it because you get to save so much money. You can get gear for like cheaper than if you were to just go buy it.
Yeah. Now we can say this. Sometimes you can get gear for 10% of the cost of everybody else's. We're allowed to say that. I do have one more little interesting tidbit of news. There are two vendors now that are actively using an exploit to disable the Intel management engine on processors now.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's very interesting. One of them is a no-brainer. I mean, they just do things like this all the time. It's System76. They're a Linux-only computer company. But the other one is Dell.
Why would they disable that?
Because of the horrid security in it. Remember, Intel Management Engine runs a whole nother OS at ring -5. It has access to everything.
And it's running
a really... And in fact, the guy that wrote the OS didn't even know Intel was using it. They didn't tell him. It was a guy that, I can't remember his name, but it's Minix. And they got horrible security with it. And it can access everything.
Yeah, so disable that stuff.
Well, you can't. That's the thing. Intel has made it to where you can't disable it. Even if you disable it in your BIOS, it's still running. So Dell and System76 are actually using some known vulnerabilities from DEF CON to disable it on the processor.
Oh, well, that's good stuff.
It's just crazy.
Nothing like being hacked by your own vendor.
I know.
but would this would be considered a white hack, right? Because it's good?
Yeah, it's a good hat. It's a white hat.
White hat hack. Well, that's our show this week. If you have any questions or feedback you want to send to us, you can reach out to us on Twitter. Chris is @Feeks, and I'm @TwistOfMatt. Reach out to the show at Educating Tech, or send us an email at educatingtech@gmail.com. Educatingtech.net for links to previous episodes or links to subscribe or to send to your friends for the holidays. On 2 weeks, they can catch up because we're almost to episode 20. We'll actually probably hit episode 20 before we take our 2 weeks off for Christmas holidays, so that'll be kind of a nice even number. A nice even number to pause on. Now, what happens when we get to like episode 100?
We're gonna throw a party.
A party?
We're gonna do a YouTube broadcast and let people come in.
No, let's not do that. Because the last time we tried to throw a party, you remember it was that Windows 7 house party kit that I got?
I got one too. That was the dorkiest thing ever, Microsoft. It was cool, but it was dorky, and I never understood the flying turtle.
Nobody did. But I actually found that box of stuff in my garage the other day. I still have it all. The napkins, the bags,
the only thing I have left is the deck of cards still.
I actually still have the CD with the license key that they gave you for free.
I gave mine to the guy in Brooklyn.
Because, you know, that was the only reason why we signed up to do it, was to get that free license for Windows 7 Ultimate.
Exactly.
And it was just kind of funny and weird to be like, hey, we got this Windows 7 house party kit.
What? Did you actually do it? Of course we did.
No. But it's like, I wonder if that'd be worth anything on eBay, because literally everything is still in my box. I don't think anything got removed out of that box. Everything is still in there.
You should totally list it.
Windows 7 house party kit. Includes the bags, the napkins, everything. Everything is in there.
Hilarious.
But yeah, I guess that's it. We'll see you next week, Chris.
All right, see you later, Matt.